Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Anymore.
I know Kung Fu.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This whole thing is insane.
300 years ago, you'd have been burned at the stake.
What do all men of power want? More power.
This is now the United States of Zombieland.
This whole thing is insane.
Man is evil. Capable of nothing but destruction.
Everybody is stuck with the things that they're not proud of.
More power.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
More power.
There can be only one.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator? That's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher. As a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it is. It just is. Especially when you arrive at the virtual Alexandria, that state of mind where East meets West. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. All shall be well. And all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. And for those of you watching on video, either in the tubes or Rockfin or Rumble and some of the other platforms, yes, that was the virtual Alexandria. I have recently added the module. It's a little bit different, but I added Active Imagination by Jung, an excellent video that you should watch. And as I've mentioned before, if you join the virtual Alexandria Academy, you get all three Astrognosis replays. So you get an extra 30 hours of exclusive high octane gnosis not found anywhere else for the most part. And I'm excited too because our guest today, I actually met at the last Astrognosis. It was truly a pleasure hanging out with him and talking to him. He presented on Hecate, and it was a mind-blowing, engaging, and very ethereal presentation. So check it out. And of course, it does help keep the lights of the Pleroma on. And that guest today is coming for a new trilogy. So we're very excited about this as autumn is here and the season of the witch is arriving and the spirits are coming back and being active. And that is David Block. David, good to see you here, even though, of course, it was much better just hanging out in real, in the flesh, in the meat sack over at the Theosophical Society.
Yeah, thank you, Miguel. Thank you for having me on. And it's a pleasure to be here with you and a pleasure to be on the conference, of course, as well. It was a wonderful time to meet very interesting people.
Indeed, it was.
Nice to be with you as well, Vance.
Yes, Vance. Welcome. How are you doing, Vance?
I'm fine. Looking forward to hearing about my former digs of Atlantis, you know. That was one of my incarnations.
Thought you were going to say your former squeeze, Ishtar, but I
guess. Hey, you never know.
Yeah, never know.
Yeah, she dumped me, though, you know. What can I say?
Yeah, damn you, Hercules or Adonis or all those California blonde.
Gave her a bad crystal, you know. It had a crack in it.
Awesome. Well, good to see everybody already in the chats room. I hope everybody's having a good Freya day. Good to see Graham. Good to see Violet. Good to see Christine and everybody else. And yes, you definitely will enjoy it. I miss Sunshine Valerie. Good to see you too. Yes. Afternoon where you are. It's afternoon here over in Central. Mr. Mark Jefferson, how you doing? So I don't have any much housekeeping. Next week, as no surprise, we will have more Jung. We're going to have Jungian themes on a lot of very cool pieces of content, including my favorite anime, really my favorite probably Gnostic expressions out there, and that's Neon Genesis. But we'll also have Gnostic themes in Twin Peaks and other works. So we got some, we keep getting Jungian. There must be a force in the air because, as I mentioned in an email, I had like two Philip K. Dick shows lined up and they had to be rescheduled or they were canceled. So there's some force that's pushing away one of our saints and making sure we focus on Jung these days. But I ain't going to argue with the gods because like Ishtar, they will dump you hard if you mess with them. So we'll just get started. And at the end, if you have any questions, please super chat them so that we can get to them, and or if you have any complaints, whatever you want to do, but it does help, again, keep the show going. I can't do it without you. So, David, why don't we just jump into it and get started, shall we?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's start.
All right. Let's get the things over here. Here we are.
Yeah, so this is a new series of three parts. And the first one is this one, is Atlantis, Ishtar, and Humanity's Fall. And in part two, the title is The New Testament for a New Human. And in part three, I will decode the Space Odyssey 2001. And can be interesting after the Shining decoding, go back to Kubrick. And of course, there's a reason why this three parts is in the series. So if you really want to understand the Space Odyssey 2001, it's good, of course, to see the first part. There is a reason why I put this together. I hope I will wrap it up in a understandable way, but I will do the best I can. And sometimes I will have to take some detours.
Right.
And in this part is in 13 parts, and the first part, and the word was made flesh, intro, as within, so without, the garden, Cain and Abel, Tiamat and Stargates, Atlantis, Kronos and Zeus, the grid of the gods, Ishtar, the Phoenicians, Under Jolly Roger, Dead Reckoning, and the last part, and the world was made flesh, outro. And this one will be a little bit dark, but for me, there are a lot of positive things, and I want to point that out, and I will hammer that home as well, because I don't want everything to be dark. There are positive messages in this. People tend to forget the good part and focus on the dark stuff. For me, there is a good outcome of all of this. And I think Stanley Kubrick showed a positive ending of Space Odyssey 2001. And that is where I will wrap this up. So keep that in mind. And we will start with part two, as within, so without. So one thing that is very important to understand, because I have done other series, or The Watchers and The Boatman and so on, is that I've talked a lot about the manifestation in matter with the tarot cards and so on. For example, the tower, I always talked about it as a physical phenomenon, as a tower in matter. But the most important part is within us. And this concept is very hard for us human to understand, that we are really the creator of it all. So what's happened inside of us will also have a physical manifestation without us. And we have this very famous saying, as above, so below, as within, so without. But I think many people miss the point what they're talking about, because it's so hard to wrap your mind around it. But it is really in the Kybalion and the Hermetic principles, we understand that the universe is mental, and that's very true. Our matter is made up of light, vibration, and sound, the seven colors. But it also happens within us. So what you do, if you do metaphysical work, if you aim at Sirius, and you aim at Sirius, you want to go there in the metaphysical, and that's your aim, something outside of you do the same, but with matter. Seems to always be a reflection. So everything is inside you. That is the message. Nothing is outside of you. Even if you soul travel and you manage to leave your body, your soul, your spark, your light source, doesn't mean that you travel out there. It is more true that you travel inside, because everything is inside of you. But there is an elite that can't soul travel like you do. Therefore, they try to do the same, but with technology. Therefore, they are a manifestation outside of you. If you manage to soul travel to the moon, you will discover that there are buildings there. Someone has been there and put some stuff there. Buildings and so on. As above, so below. If there's stuff on the moon, if there's stuff on Earth, you will also find something on the moon. Or some technology on Earth aimed at the moon. We try to connect the moon and draw down the stars, so to speak, and energies that to have an effect on matter through the metaphysical and through technology on different planets in our solar system. This is a very strange phenomena, and it always comes to that what you can do from within your spirit, someone else have done in matter through technology. I can't explain it all. It's just bizarre. I know, very strange. But I hope I can make it clearer with this presentation. We have in from Sumer, we have the cuneiform. They have the phenomena of Ansuki. And Ansuki is cuneiform, and it means heaven and earth. And Su is the spirit, or you in between the heaven and the earth. You are between these forces. But heaven also means metaphysical. Understand that you are between matter and the metaphysical, if you still have your soul, your spark. Now you can't really lose your spirit. You can't really lose your soul, not even the elite. But your soul can become so dormant within you, and you can be so convinced that you have lost your soul, that they ain't there. What your mind cannot perceive or imagine is not there. Where your mind goes, you goes. Your imagination, what can be possible, is the first step towards the metaphysical. If you're convinced that you're an animal, material animal, without soul, that is what you get, because your mind takes you there. Now you have convinced yourself that you don't have a soul. And without a soul, you cannot take the step into the metaphysical. Now you're trapped. Not because you have lost the soul, but because you have convinced yourself that you don't have a soul. Be very careful but what you believe in, because that will take you on your fate will be determined by it. So let's go back to the garden. And I have talked about this before, but now we'll be talking about it on a different level. I will. And some of this stuff you all know about. Everybody knows it's two trees in the Garden of Eden, the tree of good and evil, the tree of knowledge, and so on.
Right.
Everybody knows that, but I have to bring it up still. And of course, the tree of knowledge is the kliphotic tree, the dark tree. And the tree of light, life, is the tree of light. And we are taught to believe that this Garden of Eden is a place of wonder, is a paradise, and that's a good place to be in. But it can really be a trap. We humans have, we need something to fight against or struggle against. That is when we evolve. If nothing happens, we become very lazy, laid back, don't do anything. It's very dangerous to have too good life. I'm sorry to say that, but if you are very, very satisfied with your life, you ain't struggled to get anything more than that. If you're satisfied with your house, your money, your job, nothing wrong to be happy, but that's not the main goal here. If you're only satisfied with it and you don't strive for anything more, then you're trapped in your own matter, in your own paradise. And I don't wish anyone bad luck or that they're unhappy, yeah. But that's just how the humanity is. Well, in this garden, you have the snake, of course. And this snake tempted Eve to eat the fruit because she would know evil or get knowledge of good and evil and gain insights. And the snake, there's a lot of discussion. Who is this snake? Well, it is Azazel. Azazel is the snake. And he tempted Eve to eat this fruit. But there is a reason for it. It's not out of evil. According to the Watchers, from their perspective, humanity have come to a dead end. To be in a paradise where nothing happens, we become stale and nothing evolves from there. This is really a trap. Trap in matter, but in metaphysical paradise as in matter. Still a metaphysical place, but it's similar as to be satisfied in matter. In spiritual terms, it means that you don't evolve. And of course, many have speculated that maybe this is the construction of the demiurge and Enlil and so on. And there is some truth to that. And I think you can say that. Very interesting thing with Azazel is that his sigil is like Saturn's sigil. Saturn and Azazel have the same sigil. But this sigil of Azazel is not his sigil. It is really more the Saturn sigil. Azazel's sigil look a little bit different. Why does Azazel's sigil look like Saturn's sigil? What's going on here? Well, there are a couple of things we have to understand with this Eve temptation. Azazel could be seen as a mask of Lucifer or as a persona of Lucifer. Azazel's sigil is the sigil of Saturn. Azazel has said or stated that he is trapped in Mimas, and Mimas is one of Saturn's moon. Lucifer is chained by Zeus on Caucasus Mountain. Lucifer is bound. Lucifer is held back. Lucifer is restrained. That is exactly what Azazel has said that he is. in one of Saturn's moon. And therefore, I think a misunderstanding have come about that attribute Saturn's sigil to a sigil, when in fact that sigil is Saturn's sigil. And here we can see a couple of things comes together. The theme that Prometheus was chained, a sigil statement that he is trapped in Mimas, and the fact that the sigil can be seen as a mask of Lucifer, or persona of Lucifer. I will come back to this. This is very important for our situation. When Eve ate of this fruit, the fall of man happened. But this fall shouldn't be seen as something negative, but a necessity. It is not good or evil. It is how we human work. And you can take it to a very dark explanation and say that the demiurge trapped human there. You can have a little bit kinder analyze and say that humanity have come to a certain spiritual level, but didn't understand how to proceed. And to be in the light and feel good makes you think that you are one with the Creator, when in fact you are not even close. And if you believe that, that's your way of thinking, that becomes the truth. It's exactly the same with the New Agers. They say, I'm one with the Creator, I'm one with the light, when you know where they are far from it, but you can't tell them that. That's what they believe. That's their mindset. They are trapped. Then a collective fall has to occur, and the Sazel make sure that the fall happened. So we can go back into darkness and start to go back with the knowledge of the light, with the knowledge and a new method how to go forward in evolution to avoid the stalemate. Now, more things happen in this Garden of Eden and this this is a fall, of course, and we have to talk about Cain and Abel. And this story, once again, is very misunderstood because we only hear the Christian version of it. And of course, in the Christian version, Cain is the evil one. Of course he is. And Abel is the good one. Where the original myth come from Sumer. But in the Old Testament, it takes the form of this Cain and Abel myth. And we learn that Abel and Cain were farmers. Now you have to understand that farmers is under Enlil rule, because Enlil line is the farmer gods. Like Enlil and Ninurta. They are farmer gods. The Enki line are shepherds. The Enki line is shepherds, shepherd gods. So you have shepherd versus farmers. Now we know that this Garden of Eden has something to do with Enlil and farming. Because Abel and Cain were farmers. And Abel and Cain was supposed to sacrifice something to Enlil, the farmer god. And Abel sacrificed an animal, and Cain sacrificed wheat. And Enlil was pissed off by Cain, of Cain, and he wanted to expel him. Now it says that Cain was jealous of Abel. Well, that should be understood as a very humane thing. When we are born and we realize that we are very different from our fellow man. I talk about all of you who listen. You understand that. Why can't I go to school Why can't I sit still and just do what I'm supposed to do and follow order? Why am I always don't want to follow different question things? Why do I want to walk my own way? Why ain't I a follower? Why can't I get a job 9 to 5 and be happy about it? And just shut up, get my money, have some children and die. No, something is nagging you. But when you're a kid, when you're young, it's also a jealous thing. You're jealous of people who just can go along. You are different. That's the reason why Cain was jealous of Abel. Why do I feel the urge to go against the God Enlil? Why can't I just go along? When you become older, you stop this jealousy and you realize that it's very good to be different. That's my strength. I have an individuality. I will have a hard life in this social machine called society, yes. But it's a good thing. I don't want to be like the others. I don't want to have an original work. Nothing wrong with work, right? But it has to be something more to life than that. Something else is taking my attention. When Cain kills Abel, it could be understood in more than one way. As always, these stories could be understood on very many different levels. But you can view Abel as the part in humanity that want to obey and just want to go along and want to bend its knees, want to adhere to authority. When Cain slay Abel, Cain cut out the part of him that wanted to obey or bend his knees to the God Enlil. He started to take out the part in him that told him to obey and to be obedient and not think for himself. And all of you have slayed many Abels within you, and you start to walk your own way, different from the mainstream humans. You have your own ideas, what you want to do. And for the most part, they are metaphysical. And now you become a walker with Cain in the metaphysical, or towards the metaphysical. For the punishment, Enlil expelled Cain. Now that wasn't a bad thing. That was planned according to the Watchers, because they didn't want Cain in paradise. Nothing happened in paradise. Humanity had come to stand still and someone had to leave. This is similar to the fall, right? Something need to happen, otherwise humanity would come to a standstill. And Cain was expelled from the paradise, and that was the plan from the beginning. The mark of Cain is put on his forehead. Cain's symbol is a skull and crossbone. Now, a lot of skulls and bones with Cain. And of course, that has a lot of symbology. When you draw the death card, for example, you die and you are reborn into a new version of yourself. A better, a more true version of yourself. You have realized something new within you, probably something to do with spirit. You walk further into the metaphysical realm with your spirit. You have become a Cain, a walker in the metaphysical. He walks the land, he travels the sea. He travels in the metaphysical. He is a boatman. He is a necromancer. He is not a farmer. Now, of course, this Cain method and left and path can be taken too far. And there's always, you have to draw your own line and stand by it. And of course, I'm going to talk about that today. what has happened and why. In part five, we talk about Tiamat and the Stargate. So I want to take you into technology for a while now. And I will talk about this Tiamat, an ancient god, a great old one, the old dragon. But what is this story about? Some say Tiamat and Krypton is the same planet. And this is a planet who existed between Mars and Jupiter and became the asteroid belt when it exploded. There is also speculation that it was a water planet. And we have this mythology about Superman, right? These superheroes are always into some esoteric stuff. Not always, but most of it. Some deeper meaning behind the cartoons. And Superman have an S on his chest. Some speculate that it is serpent. I speculate, think it is serpent from Sirius. And now I will speculate a little bit further. This cannot be proved. Not yet, at least. And of course, this is speculation. But I think that in very old times, Sirius had a natural connection to two of our planets and suns in our solar system. And that was Tiamat and our sun. That was a natural stargate for us to travel to Sirius in the metaphysical, through yourself, through your spark, through your soul. During this time, you had a natural connection with the spirits from Sirius. But something happened. In the Sumerian mythology and in Babylonian mythology, you have this war between Marduk and Tiamat, or the Anunnaki gods and the great old ones. And it says that Marduk came in contact with Tiamat through his orbit, and that this orbit came from outside our solar planet from the beginning. Marduk's planet came into our solar system and was headed for a collision with Tiamat. And we call this Marduk's planet, so-called Nibiru. And Nibiru destroys Tiamat through a collision with the planet. Marduk's satellite, or wind, came in contact with the planet. The asteroid belt is created after the collision, after the destruction. And Tiamat was defeated. It also says that Marduk gets his strength from his father Enki, who is also his Poseidon and Neptune. And he came with the wind, with an asteroid attached to him, or satellite. And Tiamat was destroyed. And in that collision, he defeated the old ones and took his place in our solar system. And he took Jupiter as his planet in the end. So we have this asteroid belt, and the asteroid belt is between, of course, between Jupiter and Mars. And it's a ring. And of course, you can see it if you have a good equipment. I think you can call this ring the crown of Lucifer, if you want to, because I think that they try to uphold the stargate, the natural stargate towards Sirius, by taking one of the asteroids from this asteroid belt and move it to where our moon is now, or it is our moon. Why? Because they still have that resonance from Tiamat who had the connection to Sirius, natural connection, resonated in this asteroid belt. They took a big chunk of this asteroid belt, an asteroid, and moved it to create our moon. And our moon become a gate or a stargate towards Sirius. But they had put, they needed to put some technology on the moon for it to work. And I will come back to it why. But there are more things happening here, right? But they tried to uphold the stargate who was destroyed. The natural stargate for the human race to have a natural connection with the spirits from Sirius. And the spirits from Sirius is called Oneness. And they are the one who teach us the art of civilization, esoteric methods and so on. If that connection is destroyed, then we don't have this natural connection and knowledge from these forces or spirits. We also know that the moon is responsible for ebb and flow. Therefore, it has a connection to water. It's very strange, a lot of phenomena with this moon of ours that cannot be explained in natural terms. The size of it, the dark side, a lot of things going on here. I will not explain it, talk about it more than this because it's going to be very long anyway, but we all know that there are a lot of strange phenomena around this moon of ours. So let us go to Atlantis in part six. Atlantis is such a enigma, and we don't really know exactly what happened. But as a left-hand path practitioner, I start to understand a couple of things, but we will never understand it fully, probably. What has been said about it is that it ended about 10,000 BC. The flood was a memory loss and loss of soul. Now you can't really lose your soul, but the soul was so dormant in humanity that it was almost gone. A war was raging. And this war was between the Titans and the Anunnaki gods, or the Olympians. And it was a war. And it becomes more and more clear for me, because I got more and more information from it. Therefore, for me, it's clear that a huge war was raging during this time, between these forces. Now, of course, it was played out by humans in matter. The war was fought between humans and different faction of believers in different gods. And we know that the Titans, the Watchers, was one of those factions. For example, Belial is a Watcher, but Belial's name is also Kingu. And Kingu was a Titan, a champion of Tiamat. Therefore, we know that Belial also is a Titan and a Watcher. And Belial has stated that he was the one who let Fenrir loose. And we know that Fenrir was a dark wolf, not very nice energy, spirit. So why did Belial do it? For the same reason for the Garden of Eden, humanity were very close to end up under a prison for your soul and mind, where we couldn't escape it, or we risk ended up there for thousands upon thousands of years. So fall and destruction had to happen. But it was Enlil who brought the flood upon us in the end. And we have discussed this many times before. Water is, of course, Mem, the Hebrew letter Mem. So it's not like he tried to drown humanity, the totality of humanity. It was a big flood, but not a planetary flood. But he is talking about destruction of humanity. And humanity is not humanity if the soul is gone or very dormant. A human is a person with a body and a soul. Enlil wanted to destroy humanity because humanity made too much noise. Meaning too much technology, too much soul travel, too much fun. Now we also know that Fenrir, according to the Asal belief, swallowed the sun. And I think it's a symbol act of shutting down the sun or blotted out the sun. Could be done through technology and esoteric method. But I think the sun was very close to go blank, so to speak.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So in the end of Atlantis period, we have this darkness and memory loss. The grid is destroyed, the grid I talked about before. Tunnels and the underworld. The elite. I call them elite because they still have control of huge part of humanity. Therefore, they are some kind of elite for me. If we don't want to call them elite, we have to do away with them. They fled into tunnels and into the underworld to survive this apocalypse. And they took technology with them. Because everything wasn't broken, everything wasn't lost. A lot of stuff they could save. And I'm sure there was a huge struggle between this so-called elite and what they wanted to do with the technology, who gets what, how to, what technology should we save, and so on. It's not like these people are in perfect harmony with each other, right? Lot of conflict during this period of time. For example, when we're talking about the period from 10,000 BC to 5,000 BC, and I ask people what happened during this time, no one has a clue. It's like a dark blank of nothingness. And it doesn't seem to find very cool structures like the pyramids, because I think if you're into esoteric lore, we believe that the pyramids are at least 12,000 years old, right? But no similar structure can be found between 12,000 BC and 5,000 BC. I'm sure that we can dig up some, and there are stuff under the surface, for sure. But it's very strange, isn't it? As soon as they find some structure, it is dated to 10,000 BC or earlier. Or earlier. Why not 7,000 BC? What happened there? What happened? Now we can speculate, but it's all impossible to have an answer. But I think the elite were busy to building back the grid they had lost through technology that was damaged and the infrastructure was damaged. They couldn't reproduce the technology, but they could try to fix the technology they saved. But there's a huge difference to have factories and stuff that can build stuff and be stuck with technology that you need to take care of, maintain. And I think it was a struggle between these forces, this elite, what they want to do and how they want to kickstart society, if they want to do it or how. Should we share this technology with the surviving humanity, or should we use it against them to make them do our bidding this time around? A very interesting mythology is, of course, Mahabharata, the Indian epic myth. And I saw a lecture that talked about this Mahabharata, and it was a person. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. I will find it again, and I will bring it up again. But he talked about this Mahabharata, and they describing the stars in a certain way in the Mahabharata. So he tried to trace it back to what time are they talking about in Mahabharata. I tried to turn back the skies where it were. And he came to the conclusion that he thought it was between 5,000 BC and 10,000 BC. Could it be, this is just a question, I have no answer to this, could it be that the Mahabharata happened between 10,000 BC and 5,000 BC, a huge battle where they tried to use the technology they had saved, people with different goals, and this epic battle take place, and that they have taken that away from us because they don't want us to understand what happened. History, they want to control history, whatever it takes. Atlantis is a myth, Mahabharata is a myth, because they need you to believe that you're an animal that evolved without soul. And that's how they can control you. If you believe that something else has gone on in the future, you can become empowered by it. If I tell you, you have been around the period of Atlantis and you were maybe a very powerful esoteric priest, mm-hmm. with a lot of knowledge and with soul, and that your soul traveled back then the game is up. They had to convince you that you're a piece of shit and you should work and die, and that's it. History can prove them wrong, and they don't like that. They will stick to it, whatever it takes. So let's talk about this Greek mythology now, and Cronus and Zeus. What's going on here? And I know I've talked about this before, but now I want to shift perspective to as within. It doesn't mean that what I talked about before is false. It's only mean that now we're talking about as within and not as without. You're focusing less on the physical flashy stuff now. So here's the myth. Cronus swallows his children. Zeus fools him. He gives him a stone. Zeus is the human esoteric elite. Elen inerta Cronus swallows his soul. The intellect and technology of the elite remains. Zeus is the part of humanity who lost their soul during the period of Atlantis. And drowned humanity in memory. In the end of Atlantis, a human esoteric elite survives through technology and intellect. The soul is destroyed, swallowed. The soul cannot really, really be destroyed. The knowledge remains, no memory loss. And I think they managed to go around this with technology. The elite has to rely on technology and esoteric method based on an external source. The soul is lost. They control the astral plane through technology and through some esoteric method, but they are stuck in the astral and in the matter. They can't go further than that. Then you need a soul, or you can hope for technology, because hope is the last thing that escapes humanity. So you can hope for technology, but I don't think you can. Prometheus is a spark in darkness. Prometheus Lucifer is part of humanity, the part of humanity with the soul intact. The soul is dormant but not lost. The memory is lost but not the soul. Prometheus is a spark that can ignite. The elite worship Prometheus bound, the human soul restrained under control. The human soul under examine with technology, for example, a Sazel bound in Mimas. And this is what the elite are acting out today with the technology. They use it against us, they use it to examine us, they have lost something. I don't think this is anything new. I think this started after the period of Atlantis. And as I say, so I stated, the Nephilim rise up to fight against men without soul, the soulless men without creativity and imagination. Prometheus is chained by Zeus on Caucasus Mountain. An eagle takes his liver over and over again. Prometheus is an immortal and cannot die. Zeus wants to know what Prometheus knows. The liver is also a symbol for to know divination through the liver, seat of the emotions, and the soul. The elite want to know about the future. They want to understand what the soul is, and they want what emotions is. They are stuck in matter, and we have the key for them, but they don't understand it. What it is, the spark, the soul. And of course, this is the theme in Dark City. This is the Dark City talks about the soul. Is what they search for. So in part 8, the grid of flesh. So what is this grid? And this is a lot of misunderstandings in this. I tried to explain it many times. I will try to do it again with a little bit different twist. Well, the demiurgic prison is of course not the totality of the universe, but a very small, minute part of it. But sad to say, we are part of that minute place. So the plan is now a solar system is part of that grid. Saturn, remember, Saturn swallowed the soul of the elite, trapped them in matter. They are stuck in matter. And Saturn is the last planet in our solar system that you have to overcome to open up gateways towards the zodiac and the fixed stars, and to exit this matrix. To exit the matrix, you have to go through Saturn. So the zodiac and the fixed stars is really the boundaries of this demiurgic prison. And I say prison, but it sounds very negative, but there are good things here as well, I promise. The creator, the light, the source of everything is outside of the matrix grid. Mm. And therefore, you have a choice. If you are in the right-hand path, your aim can be to join the Creator, the Light, exit the Matrix, exit reincarnation, and never come back again. And you are gone. The good part is that they cannot stop you if you really, really want it. But they will make it very, very, very hard. Through technology, and the most important part is not technology, but it is a war over your mind. Because what you can't imagine cannot be come to fruition. You have to imagine it. And if the Demiurge fooled humanity to wait for Jesus, or that you are an animal in matter, you will never start this journey. It's gone, doesn't exist for you. You can't imagine that it can be something else. If you don't understand reincarnation, you think you have only one life and that you should indulge yourself as much as possible before the end, that it won't take you very far. You have to think in terms of reincarnations. This walk with Cain can take a while. Think of reincarnations. The elite thinks in terms of reincarnations because their goal cannot be achieved through one reincarnation, but many reincarnations. You have to think like them, but with a different goal, of course. A different outcome. But it cannot be achieved through one reincarnation, or cannot, maybe, I don't know, if you work very hard, who knows? So we have this fixed star Algol. Algol, this fixed star have connection to, for the most part, two planets, or one sun, one planet, or two suns. But depending on how you view it. Oh, my presentation disappeared. Algol has an influence of Saturn and Jupiter. So Algol is the power behind the throne. And I think Enlil should, if Enlil has a planet or a fixed star or a star, it should be Algol. Because he is the ruler behind the throne. But Saturn, Ninurta, rules in his stead. Because the ancient Anunnaki gods was removed from our solar planet, solar system. But Enlil's influence could be used throughout. And this Algol influence is in turn Saturn and Jupiter. So what is this? This is probably some kind of a energy grid where the planets and the fixed stars have a connection with each other through energy, light and sound. And some planets have stronger connection than others and influence each other more. And of course, we come to astrology and stuff like that. We find Algol in the Solabusca deck, the tarot deck. The oldest complete tarot deck is from 1470 or something like that. It was ordered by a very rich family, the Este. In one of those cards, in the Major Arcana, card number 13, the death card, of course. But in this card, you see Perseus, and Perseus has stabbed a Gorgon head in the eye. But there are more things happening here. Now remember, this can be understood on many different levels. And on one level, you can talk about Orpheus, or it's a symbol of Orpheus, the Gorgon's head, the head. And Orpheus was a musician. I will come to that in more detail. You can also see it as Gorgon, Medusa's head. And Medusa is attributed to Al Ghul. The star Al Ghul is attributed to Medusa. The head of the Gorgon is in Al Ghul. And it is Perseus who cut the head off Medusa and take it down to matter and use the head as baneful magic against his enemy and turn them to stone. Because if you see Medusa in the face, you will be turned to stone. Perseus is the son of Zeus, and now we come back to Zeus. And Zeus gave him his armor that Perseus used to defeat this Medusa and cut the head of Medusa. We have this same theme in Batman, where Ra's al Ghul is the enemy, it's destruction, it's chaos. What they are talking about is to keep chaos at bay and use the enemy's weapon against the enemy or against humanity. It's a flag, and on the flag it says, driven by fate, that he's bound by a pattern. You can also see the color scheme is purple and red. And the Al Ghul star is very close to his head in the sky. The star is Al Ghul. And Al Ghul is used in baneful magic to enhance attack magic against others, or enhance the effect of magic it can have on others. To use Medusa's head. And also, of course, it's about drugs and so on. Amon Hillman is talking about that stuff. Now we'll come to that, but in a different way. Orpheus, the music Orpheus was so powerful that all the world and underworld could be swayed by it. It is thought that his lyre was given to him by Apollo, who ruled over music. He was able to play his music so powerfully that he was able to prevent the Argonauts from hearing the evil siren's song. And this evil siren song is very important to remember here. And music is very often a big thing, a big symbology behind uses music. And music is, of course, frequencies. And I remember I was in a school where my teacher taught me that before, in the big churches, they have this organ. They could play the tune so loud and vibrate it so loud that the soul was shaking loose from the audience, and they had an out-of-body experience. And I think music was used to do similar thing as that, as a method. But it's very important that you understand that you're more than only your body. And that's a good way to do it. As long as you believe you're only your body, you are stuck. Now, let's talk about Sirius. The frequency of Sirius is probably 33. And if you come in tune with the 33 frequency, you start to get in tune with the spirits from Sirius. And you have become a boatman, an astral boatman, a traveler. But it takes quite much to come that far. A lot of method and work has to be done, but it can be done. And as I said before, Tiamat was connected to Sirius. That is what I think, what I believe, and the sun. But because of the destruction of Tiamat, and they created the moon out of one of Tiamat's asteroids from the belt, the gate, the stargate, became from our sun Saturn and the Moon. Saturn and the Moon with technology. Therefore, I'm pretty sure that they have some interesting technology on the Moon. I'm also pretty sure that they have technology on Saturn's moons. For example, Mimas or Iapetus. The Sun is probably a stargate and could be seen as a black hole. All this technology has to be aimed at Sirius to open up the stargates through the Moon, from Saturn, and then the Sun. The gods that are attributed to Sirius are very interesting. They have one god called Dagon, and Dagon is an amphibious creature or amphibious god living in water. And this is very important because I talked about Tiamat as a water planet, and it seems that the gods attributed to Sirius is also connected to water in some kind. Another god attributed to Sirius is Enki. And Enki's name in Greek mythology was Poseidon, and Poseidon is the god of water. And in Egypt, Ptah. So yet again, you have water attributed to the gods towards aimed at Sirius or attributed to Sirius. And Tiamat was considered to be a water planet yet again. Ptah was Enki's name in Egypt. And Ptah created the pyramids, and I talked about this before, but a huge component in the pyramid was water, to charge water. And I believe they charge water with plasma. And plasma, I think the gods are plasma. To draw down the gods from the heavens into matter. And Ptah made it possible through technology and esoteric method to draw down the gods, communicate with spirits through technology and esoteric method. And I've talked about this many times before, but it's worth mentioning it again. We come, of course, to the Tower of Babel moment. What is happening here? It is 1850 BC. In Babylon, and the Mardukites have taken over the city and they worship Marduk. And they start to build this tower. They want to reach the heavens. And this is Etemen Anki, Kadinger Raki of Babylon, or the Tower of Babylon, the Ziggurat of Babylon. And Ziggurat are seven-stepped pyramids, but nonetheless, they are pyramids. And we can see the cosmic influence are Mars and Saturn, of course. Sadly, it was destroyed by Nimrod. And there are many misunderstandings of this character, Nimrod. This Mardukite elite priest class was on their way to succeed, to recreate the technology, to open up the stargates again, aimed at, I think, Saturn, the Moon, and our Sun. And for Marduk's point of view, it was quite urgent to do so, because according to me, what we see in the Greek mythology, this is further back in time, right? We are not there yet. But Marduk start to, he is a demigod. The forces of Enlil, Ninurta, Saturn starts to work on him as well. He starts to be heavy into matter in a fallen state or a fallen angel state. He's a demigod, therefore he shares a lot of our traits, the human traits, limits. But he is more powerful as a god, of course, half god, demigod. The urgency was he created the tower because he wanted to reconnect to his father Enki, and Enki's star is Sirius, and wants to open up the stargates again, and the technology is there on the Moon, Saturn's rings, and the aim was for our sun. And the black sun behind our sun, Sirius, or the sun behind the sun, 666. And Darth is also into this, but Darth is not a physical material planet or sun. It is something, a mental state within you. It is a hidden Sephiroth. Hidden Sephira. This Nimrod is Ninurta. And Ninurta works for Enlil. And Nimrod infiltrate the priest class of Marduk and destroy this building from within. Meaning they don't want these forces to reconnect to heaven. Enlil have already told humanity, no, no, too much noise, too much soul traveling. I don't want you here. Please go away. I will destroy you again. It's not fan. He's no fan of humanity, let's say.
Doesn't even like our music, huh?
Not even the music. Not even Elvis.
Yeah, well, it was probably Taylor Swift that made him permanently change his mind.
So. Yeah, probably. Some shitty music. Anyway, the destruction was complete. And he fractured the Babylon Tower and the language. And remember, language is a form of technology. Mem is language. Mem is water. Mem is nations. And he destroyed it and separated us and separated the human race. He didn't want us to come together and try to do something. The elite ends up under Saturn rule. Nimrod Nergal destroyed the Stargate, the Tower of Babylon, pushing the elite further down into matter. Many of them become worshippers of Saturn, Enlil. Shift side to Jehovah's son, Ninurta, the Demiurge. A blend between Ninurta and Marduk worshippers take form. Saturn, the one who rules matter. Remember, Saturn is considered one, the star or planet that makes matter in solid or make the light dense. The loss of souls, Atlantis time, and now technology makes them shift focus. The loss of the souls and Atlantis time during the Atlantis time and now technology. And technology makes them shift focus, and now they want to take humanity with them into matter. So this is really a fall further down into matter, and also the feeling of loss and giving up for now. And we all know how it is how to try to achieve something, a big goal, just to see it in ruin. So let's focus on the boatman now. What is a boatman? And I've talked about this in previous series, but I want to remind you. A boatman is a person who travels towards Sirius with his own body, temple. Your temple is your alchemical temple. Turn it from lead into gold and you will change your frequencies and become in tune with Sirius and with the spirits from Sirius once. In other words, you can start to communicate with these spirits from Sirius because your body starts to become in tune with the right frequencies with these spirits. A lot of method need to be done, but it can be done. And they are waiting for you. It's not like they don't want you, but these forces, the elite, have made it very hard for us, but it can be done. The technology and everything they have manipulate us with is a burden for us, of course. but you can overcome it. Nothing is impossible here. Now, for me, I have decided as a boatman, I want to return here. I don't want to leave. I don't want to go back to source, to light. But I don't want to go into matter without spirit or without the ability or knowledge to soul travel. Therefore, I will not be trapped in matter, but I can enjoy both. I can be in matter and leave whenever I want into the metaphysical and soul travel and take back everything we have lost and to rediscover everything we have lost of the Atlantis. There are a lot of realms, metaphysical realms, waiting for us to return and to explore. I think it's a very rewarding thing. Remember, this ain't a prison if you can leave whenever you want into the metaphysical.
That is true.
And there are a lot of things that is very good in matter. Remember, everything is not dark and bad here. We can watch the sunset. We can have a fire going, have friends, having a good time. If you leave and go back to the source, you will never experience this again. Now, I understand that some people have a bad time and suffer. And there are a lot of suffering right now. And that has to change, of course. We have to do away with this elite and take over and change this place to our image, not theirs, of course. Now, these amphibious creatures, I want to talk about them because they start to pile up through myth and so on. And I also want to remind you again that Tiamat was a water planet. The gods and spirits from Sirius is amphibious in turn. So you have Dagon, the god, is amphibious. The great old ones with the Cthulhu and all of those is amphibious. Oneness is amphibious. Octopus is amphibious. Sirens are amphibious and mermaids are amphibious. Now the sirens we have to take in brackets, but we will come back to them. And the very interesting thing is when people talk about these whales and dolphins and so on, it seems to come from a different world. It seems to not belong here. I don't know. I just want to bring it up. Maybe there is something to it. Maybe they ain't from here from the beginning. Maybe they come from another planet. Who knows? Speculation from my part. So let's shift focus to Ishtar in part 9. Ishtar has many names in myth and legend, and here is some of them. Inanna, Isis, Aphrodite, Venus, Astarte, Metis, and Brigitte. And when others, the Christian, take hold, she get a bad rap and was called Astoreth or Astoroth. These are a few names, but there are many, many more. And they call her the goddess with 1,000 names. So this is just the start of it. But we can leave it at that because it will take a very long time. But these names, most people recognize or they know. And of course, her planet is Venus. The transfer of the arch of civilization from Eridu to Erech. So this is in the Sumerian mythology and Babylonian mythology. And this is about Ishtar. Seeking greater abundance and power for her city, Inanna traveled to Eridu, the residence of Enki, in pursuit of secret knowledge. Her charm, coupled with the looseness that comes with heavy drinking, won over Enki, who gave up some 100 decrees and treasure in his compromised state. Well, we all know about that, guys. We can leave it at that. These are then loaded onto her boat of heaven and transported back to Erech. And Erech is her city. Her city state, of course. Meaning she takes hold of some ancient technology from Atlantis and take them to her city from Eridu, from Enki. Or knowledge, esoteric method, knowledge about esoteric method, and take it to her city. So you can see there is a struggle even among the gods over this technology and knowledge, esoteric knowledge. And Ishtar have a lover, Tammuz or Damusi. And we learn about the descent of the goddess Ishtar into the lower world. So the romantic patina for Inanna Ishtar is toned by the Romeo and Juliet motif in the relationship with her consort, Damusi, Sumerian, the god shepherd. The name Damusi means the good shepherd. This is important, right? Because Damusi comes from Enki line. Damusi Tammuz is actually the youngest son of Enki. Her intended spouse was, however, Marduk. But Marduk and Ishtar didn't like each other. And according to me, Marduk is Zeus. Same god, different name. You can say that Zeus is also Enlil, because Zeus in that state, in the Greek mythology, had ended up under the forces of Enlil, and the forces started to work on him or manipulate him or change him, because he had ended up under Enlil, Jupiter, and Saturn forces, and he failed to build the tower to open up the skies. And he is a demigod. I want to point that out again. The reason why he became the gods of the gods in Olympian time was because he defeated Tiamat and he got that title. Not because he was the oldest god or the wisest god, but because he defeated Tiamat. So let's enter the underworld with Ishtar. Descent of the goddess Ishtar into the lower world. To the land of no return, the land of darkness, Ishtar, the daughter of sin, to the house of shadows, the dwelling of Irkalla, to the house without exit, for him who enters therein, to the road whence there is no turning, to the house without light, for him who enters therein. The place where dust is their nourishment, clay their food. They have no light. In darkness they dwell. Doesn't sound like a very nice place.
Not at all. Not at all.
Gatekeepers, open the gate. Open the gate that I may enter. This is Ishtar saying. If thou opens not the gate to let me enter, I will break the door. I will wrench the lock. I will smash the door posts. I will force the doors. I will bring up the dead to eat the living. With the festival garment deck him that he may play on the flute of lapis lazuli. Sorry, this is another part of this poem because I cannot take it all in. But that is the first part of it, where she enters the...
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month, And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.